What do you hope to do with the current president?
Introduce him to the general population.
You're not serious.
Keep a man in a cage and he'll behave like an animal. Give him his freedom and he'll remember his humanity.
That's your plan, is it? To create an enlightened society.
Do I sense skepticism in your question, don't you?
I suppose I'm just curious to know if you think there are any individuals whose crimes are so heinous they justify imprisonment.
Sadists. Who find gratification in the debasement of others. And those cowards who would send younger men to their deaths in battles they themselves would avoid. Except for these, I believe all men can be rehabilitated. Often by the simple act of having their dignity restored.
And that, boys and girls, was a clip from Stonehurst Asylum. I think you'll get quite a bit of interesting information out of that film if you watch it and listen to what they're saying closely. Yeah. Okay. White Aryan Resistance radio calling. White Aryan Resistance radio calling. Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger here in the bunker right outside of Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, P.O. Box 401. And we're up to our buttocks in snow. Yeah, man. I got some pictures here if I can get them on the computer. Ever since I went from XP to this 8 and 7, nothing works right. And then I have to get my webmaster to bail me out. I used to be able on XP just to plug a camera in and it's a, download the pictures and download them, no problem. I'll tell you now I have all kinds of problems. But I will try to send you the pictures. It's beautiful out. We got a beautiful, clear day, sunshine. And something I did to my arm or shoulder or something, twisted it or something. It was really screwing me up the last 24 hours. And so I couldn't shovel snow, so I was wondering, why in the hell am I going to get this driveway all cleaned out? And called my buddy downtown. He don't do it, but all of a sudden, just like a angel out of Valhalla, my neighbor who has always done it in the past, and I didn't know whether he was even around. I thought he was down in Florida or something. Here he comes with his mini cat and got that snow out of my parking lot real quick. That's good because I could not operate a snow shovel today. One problem I have here in the bunker. The bunker's great, but it's a cement floor. And boy, I'll tell you, that cold comes right up through that floor. And when it gets real cold around here, I got to put a heating pad on the floor to keep my feet from freezing off. It's fine from the ankles up, it's fine, but that concrete floor is really cold. Well, I decided to relax yesterday for a while on Sunday after I gave reverence to the All-Father Son. And I watched a documentary on Sudan, or rather South Sudan, and it's about 2 hours. And normally I don't have that much time to spend on something like that, but since it was all about our equal Negroes, I thought, well, let's take a look at this thing. You may not know much about Sudan. It's one of the largest countries. It was largest country, I believe, in Africa until they split in two. So you got North Sudan and South Sudan. North Sudan is run by Arabs, and they did really control the whole ball of wax. But there was a guerrilla war, civil war took place, and the South split off from the North. Now the South has got the oil. But for the South to get the oil through the North, which is now a separate Arab country, they have to, they got to go through it and to get to the port. So they have a hell of a time because the North Sudan wants to charge the South Sudanese a little bit more money than it should, they should be doing, you know. So here is this new country, all black, totally absolute black, black. I mean, I didn't see any mulattoes, hardly. It was all black, black, tar baby. So they said, you know, here they're trying to build this nation out of nothing. There's nothing there outside the oil. It's scrub land, and there's a little bit of agriculture, but not much of that. So the president, who was the guerrilla general, is running the country now. He said, well, we'll fix them. We won't ship them any oil. Well, wait a minute. That's all the input you've got for your treasury in South Sudan. If you don't sell the oil, you're screwed. And so South Sudan is almost a failed state before it even starts. But this whole drawn-out thing showed hundreds of white people coming in there from the UN and all over the place, and some of the Chinese. And they want to help them build a nation. Well, that is really something else, to think that you can send some boxes down to a place like that that has no government or anything else, no treasury, no taxing ability or anything, and open up the box and open up and you got a nation. Well, they've got all these tribes within their new nation, so-called, and they don't get along. So before the print is dry on the paper, they've already got the militias rising up and killing 1,000 people. I mean, 1,000 people, man. 1,000 Negroes. So every scene in this documentary, you've got these black leaders who have been, they know nothing about running a government, taxing or anything like that. They do know how to get weapons from someplace. And around the table where they sit to try to figure things out is mostly white people. You got them from Norway and Sweden and different places. And then they're getting money from other countries. The United States gave them a few hundred million. But they can't keep this thing running because they're going to need... They have no infrastructure. They have no electric, public electric power, nothing like that. There, no roads, and the president wants to have a complete modern Western power source generating and everything right there, right now. And these white people are trying to explain to him, you don't have the money to do that. And, probably running out of patience from these Western European countries and United States of just having you on the tit. But I think it'd be nice if you could see this, and you can go up to linktv.com and find it. That it's not going to fly. And, of course, the North, the Arabs, who pretty much have made slaves in the past out of these South Sudanese, who they claim they're Christians, and that's another rub. You get into these places like that, and you got Islam on one side, and you got alleged Christians on the other. So they want to chop each other's heads off about that, too. But it really, you know, you could show this documentary to a person who believes all men are created equal. And if they've got a brain in their head, they'll see it. The whole thing laid right out before you. Here's 100% black emerging, allegedly emerging nation. They can't get their act together at all. And they have to depend on white people like they did during the colonization down there 100 years ago to bring any kind of semblance of order at all. To give you an example, they were trying to collect taxes and they didn't have a treasury. And so they were picking up taxes and store them in paper bags in a big building. Then they had a museum. They're trying to put a museum together. And they took these people into this building and there was nothing but crap. Nothing but junk on the floor. That was going to be their new museum. A couple of paintings of their general that's running the show and like that. It's impossible for me to describe everything I saw in that thing because it was long and it's unbelievable. But I think you can find it up there on Link TV, which is, you know, in the old days, you'd call it, that's a left-wing goddamn Marxist outfit. And a lot of those people are. But it's sure not much capitalism going on there, except the Chinese coming in to make deals with these Negroes to, oh yeah, we help you. We build you road. Yeah, you give us oil. Anyhow, it was, if you want a instruction, a course in race, and to see just exactly how it works, there it is. You can't compare it to some black that's living in the United States that's got all the advantages of so-called capitalist society, and even to go to school that can raise their ability somewhat, but in a total black area. Now, the question is, why would anyone stay in the area? Why would... Well, because we always did live here. And because it's so bad and so lacking of water and everything, drinking water out of puddles in the road and everything, that no white man would put up with it, or any white man that's got any brains at all. He'd say, I'm boogieing out of here. And that's, of course, that's what they try to say, that we all started down there with the niggers, and then we just sort of moved out and went up north and changed colors and became European nations. Yeah, right. Anyhow, you got to watch it. You got somebody who believes all men are equal, sit them down and make them watch that. It was at least 2 hours. Maybe it was three. Oh, yeah, they were asking these blacks what they did before. See, they fled the whole area while the war was going on, and then they came back because they went up into the North Sudan. But when they come back, they lost everything they had, which wasn't that much. And so they had to ask, put them in line and ask them, well, what did you do? Were you a farmer? Yeah, I was a farmer. Well, they gave him a wheelbarrow and 100 pounds, maybe 50 pounds of seed, and he takes off through the almost a desert to plant this shit someplace. Then they say, "You're an entrepreneur?" Yeah, I had a shop, and so they give him a few items to put in his shop to sell. And that's how they were restarting and restructuring society down there in South Sudan. I watched another movie a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot to tell you about this. It was fiction, of course, but not too much fiction. This one guy was talking, and he said, "You know what?" And the guy says, "What?" He says, "Jesus is a trick on niggers." Jesus is a trick on niggers, which he's a trick on whites too, to be perfectly honest about it. You know what thrilled my sadistic little heart yesterday? It was when I was hearing news reports of people that had spent up to $4,000 for plane tickets to the Super Nigger Bowl, and for travel and hotel and everything, and the ticket people had shut down supplying them with tickets. So here are these people spending up to $4,000 up front and not getting any tickets and couldn't go to the Super Bowl. Yeah, that's the false god, that nigger ball. So anyhow, at the height of the ticket scramble yesterday, I think I mentioned this before, a ticket to the nigger ball game, the Super Nigger Ball game, was $8,000 to $9,000 apiece. Now, you know, there are not going to be very many Negroes there except playing ball. It's going to be whites and white Jews and maybe Asians that can come up with these high prices. But it just shows you how bad it is among the white race that they would take that much money, even with if it was a few hundred bucks, away from their family, away from their kids' education and so forth, to watch a bunch of 50 Negroes running up and down the field with a football. Yeah. It's pretty bad, boys and girls. It's pretty bad. It's more than pretty bad. So you've got hundreds, maybe thousands of fathers and mothers prostituting their daughters off to these nigger football and basketball players. You see it more and more. Look at O.J. Simpson. While he was doing okay and doing good, making lots of money, the in-laws just loved O.J. They didn't love him so much after he chopped the head off of their daughter. Didn't really like him too much after that. I think if more and more of these black entertainers could be convinced to chop the heads off of their girlfriends and wives, it might, just might, make a dent on this interracial marriage. But I doubt it. I seriously doubt it, because it's promoted 24 hours a day. All the ads are full of it. You know, just a few years ago, you didn't see a black in an ad very much on television. Now, it's getting a little bit rare to see white people, or at least decent white people. You can see all the white clowns that they have a nigger, he's the brains, he's a smart guy, or she's a smart woman, like Michelle Obama. And the white guy, the white girl, always playing the stooge. And always the black guy's all buffed out, and he's got a great body and the whole bit. And the white guy's a fat slob. And in most cases, that's true. But, you know, there's a large percentage of blacks are fatter than hell. But that's not the way they want to play it. This thing is going to run its course. It's like any forest fire. It's going to run its course. And will there be white people left at the end? I was listening yesterday to them talking about the Republican Party. And, you know, sometimes these liberals, so-called liberals, and in some ways, I think I'm a liberal, too. I mean, I hate these labels. They were talking about the Republicans and how they snow the hillbillies. They actually used hillbillies, southern white working people, call them hillbillies. That while the Republican Party won't vote for anything that really benefits these white working people. Like, you know, they say, well, we feel your pain. Okay, well then raise the minimum wage. Put it up to about $15 an hour. That would help a lot. They won't do that. No, they won't do that. But what they do is every time, and I must admit, every time some more liberal Democrat suggests something that would help the working class, poor, both white and black, the Republicans, to keep these idiots corralled, will say, oh, but they're going to take your guns away. Or they're going to abort your baby. Things like that. And that's how they keep these stupid people in the Republican Party. Now, what I think would be an interesting thing, it's not going to happen, because 70 million people voted for Obama that were white this last time round. And millions of others stayed home. But what if 70 million people, or maybe 100 million whites, all of a sudden changed their registration to Democrat? And once they did, walk in there to the Democrat National Committee and say, this is what we want. You won't have to worry about winning any elections, but this is what we want. That's doable. It could be done. Other, of course, they got this nigger worship and negrophilia. I don't know. But that would be really an interesting thing to happen. Because the Republican Party is not the party of white people. It's the party of maybe white rich, but in no way is it a party of the white working people. But that liberalist was talking about that. It's exactly right. Every time the white Republican working people may think of saying, well, that Democrat's trying to do something good there, I'll go along with that because it'll give me money. I'm going to get $15 an hour at work. They say, oh, no, don't go that way because they're going to take your guns. They're going to all take your guns. Right after Obama was elected, all this shit, they went crazy, these white people. They're going to take your guns. Obama's going to take your guns. All kinds of stuff. Now, I'm not an Obama fan. I'm not a fan of any president. They're all corrupt and crooked as far as I'm concerned. But on the other hand, did he do that much harm to the white working class? He didn't do any more harm than what white leaders themselves, like McCain and all these guys. They're filth. They're rats. But they play these white working people like a string, a guitar here in Indiana, right to work. We can't have right to work. Why, that'll lead to collective bargaining. And that might lead to us getting paid a little more. Can't have that because those people are going to take our guns and abort our babies. And won't let us pray in school. Won't let us pray in... Oh, it's insane. It's insane. It's insane. It drives me crazy. And then, of course, the other thing is our budget for defense or war. It's not defense. It's war. Our budget was $700 or $800 billion. And that's just the stuff we can see. And then we got all the foreign aid and making weapons for other countries so they can start wars among themselves. And then we get into it and put troops on the ground to try to stop it and the whole bit. But how can a Republican or any politician tell you that it's terrible about the infrastructure in the country? Our roads are falling to pieces. Our bridges are falling down. Our water's getting polluted. All that stuff. And then they say, well, yeah, but we got to have national defense. We got to have $1 trillion a year for defense. From who? Who in the fuck from? Oh, wait a minute. We'll piss off the Russians. We'll start a new Cold War, and then we'll need it because you'd be scared shitless. You got to be scared shitless all the time. Those Russians were pretty quiet for a while, but boy, okay, now they're going to get us. But, well, it doesn't have anything to do with NATO pushing its military stuff right up to the border of Russia. Well, that's what we got to do, because those Russians are crazy. So we need another $1 trillion in defense money. How can the Republicans swallow that shit unless they're totally nuts? And I guess they are. I guess they are. Well, I see them advertising on the internet about all these places you can go and to live, and live cheaply, and live very, very well. And where there's apartments on the beach for $400 a month and all that kind of stuff. And that's okay, as long as the country doesn't have an upheaval and the revolutionaries come in and chop your head off. All those South American countries, the Central American countries. But a lot of them are a lot more peaceful than they let on. There's obviously crime wherever you go. More and more white Americans are deciding to get out of here. Regroup in a small housing development or sort of a little colony and like that. There's colonies down in Mexico and all over the place. That may be the way to go, to just say to hell with it and get on out and find you a little place with white sand that's cheap. I mean, I see on TV these really expensive places where you go and it's $500,000 or $1 million, but there's a lot of places that are pretty good places and don't cost that much money. You always have to be concerned about how stable the government is, and the fact that these governments in those areas can step up and take your property if they decide to. But for the real estate trade in those areas to maintain itself, that's probably not going to happen, except in an extreme case. So you young people out there, you may want to look into that, because you can stay white in countries that aren't as white as it is here. In fact, you may be safer in some non-white countries than you are here. And as the other side keeps bragging about, oh, the white race is disappearing, isn't that wonderful? You can hear it in their voice. They're just thrilled. That self-hate, white self-hatred. In a few years, those white people are all going to be gone, and the whole place will be negrophilia. And then the Mexicans and the Asians and Puerto Ricans and all the cans can fight it out and turn this thing into a real dump. Yeah. Now, whites still have enough strength and control, probably can control enough military bases to turn it around, but they're not going to, because it's not the blacks on the street that got to be dealt with, or the Mexicans either. You got to be willing to start at the top, like the French Revolution or something like that. And that's something most white people don't have the wherewithal or the guts to get into, that kind of thinking, because they think, oh my God, I could never accomplish that. Get him? Oh, hell, he's protected by the U.S. Army and all that. I couldn't get him. So as long as they want to have revolution but start at the bottom, you can never win. You can never win. You know, American Revolution was only about, what, 10% of the people became involved? In fact, in the beginning, it was only a few hundred people at Concord. And the rest of them, they didn't want any part of the revolution. And maybe they were right. I don't know, because it seems to me that what's come out of the American Revolution with the federal government has ended up being worse or just as bad as any king in England. And when the king of England's that far away, I think you're freer than if you have a pseudo-king right here in Washington, D.C. Like the one fellow in the movie about the American Revolution where they're trying to convince him to go fight the English. And they say, we got this enemy, this King George over there, clear over there in England. We got to fight him. And the guy says, well, hell, I got more enemies within 10 miles of my place here than the King of England. Your enemy's usually close to you, a lot closer than you think. And so that's why they want to, you want to fight, we're going to fight way over there all the time. We're going to fight in Vietnam. We're going to fight in Korea. We're going to fight in Europe. We're going to fight always out. Get them out. Get them out of here. Because they're in, you know, the people are a little unstable. They might just chop the heads off the leaders in the country, you know, if they ever got really smart. Instead of, and ISA, well, my opinion is this. What the hell's the difference between cutting a head off or dropping bombs, hundreds of bombs on people, pattern bombing, or gassing them, or all this stuff, and all the ways they kill people. All the ways we've killed, not we, but we have to assume collective guilt of some type, that's killed thousands and thousands and thousands of people ever since World War II, and of course in World War II. It's something else. It's something else. And then they go batshit over chopping a guy's head off. Well, the most violence that ISIS committed could never, ever, ever approach the violence of the military-industrial complex of this country and their stooges that they set up in these countries. In fact, if you look close, ISA was set up by military-industrial complex. Yeah, they were. You say maybe it's unintended circumstances? Not really, because if you've got the reins of power, you can, and you do things, you can see and figure out which way things are going to go. I mean, they do that 24 hours a day, so it's no big secret. If you start a civil war in this country for regime change, well, it's going to spill over to the next country, and we want him out too, and that's the way it goes. But chopping people's heads off? Well, I think they learned that from, what's his name, the Mongol that came through Eastern Europe and chopped heads off and hung him by the hair from his bridal bits. And people were in such fear that most of the time when he got to a village, people were already gone. He couldn't chop any heads off because they heard he's coming. So really, chopping heads off is, if you're that kind of person and you're wanting the power, it's a vicious thing, but it's effective. There's something about separating the head from the body that just scares people to hell. Even though somebody could walk up and hug you with one of those bombs that people wear over there in the Middle East sometimes, and that scares me more than having the head chopped off. It's not much of a choice, though. So, but anyhow, you see how the media handle it? And, of course, I don't believe there is a such thing as a terrorist. No, I don't. There's unconventional warfare personnel, and that's what all this is, unconventional warfare. And but if you're going to use terrorists as a term and spread it around, well, the worst terrorists are in Washington, D.C. The absolute all-time worst terrorists are right there in Washington, D.C., and their financial people on Wall Street. their CIA and all that, because they instigate all the time, and they arm all these people, and then usually it ends up the people use the arms against our people, and there's always a new batch of dumb white kids, maybe they can't get a job, that join up. Oh, I go crazy when they put on these send $19 in to support disabled veterans. Well, there was no draft. These people went there of their own accord. They volunteered out of the stupid thing, like they always do down through history. We're going way over there to defend here. I got to go to Iraq to defend the United States, even though I should be bombing Saudi Arabia. Now, if they'd have said, let's bomb Saudi Arabia into the Stone Age, I'd have said, yeah, that's a good idea. But when they said, we had got to go to Iraq to get the people who caused 9/11, duh. There are a lot of people catching on. But I think a lot of them is going to be people who have been right-wing and people been left-wing, sort of coming together and agreeing on a lot of points that are going to help the situation. We don't have to agree on everything, but we have to agree on who is really the enemy. Now the left try to count, it's racism. Are you kidding? Religion causes more hatred than racism ever did. Racism of tribalism and like that. This is my territory, that's yours. Don't come the fuck in here, we're going to kick your ass. Well, that's normal. Religious-oriented war is insanity. It's all insanity. So if you're looking for the cult of death, look in your churches. You can go into some of these churches and see what they're preaching, if you can stand it. They're preaching right out of the Jew Old Testament. Yeah, they rose up and did, defeated and killed everybody and killed all their asses and they killed all the plants and everything and they put salt in the ground and everything. But God told them to do it. And as long as some guy says that God told them to do it, it's okay. Christianity is just as bad as Islam. They're all bad. All these Abrahamic religions are bad. And if you ever want to have any kind of peace in the world, you take care of the predatory capitalists and you take care of the churches. And that would de-escalate things greatly. Well, I see that the black enrollment at Florida University, University of Florida, has dropped by 50%. That's an interesting drop. Are the Hispanics running the blacks out? Are they moving north to their capital city of black America, Atlanta? What's going on? How come 50% of the enrollment by blacks has dropped? Interesting question. I think maybe the Hispanics are putting pressure on them and they're raising the prices at the university too. Well, boys and girls, do you really want to join the right wing? You really want to join a right wing party? Well, I don't know about this. The NPD over there in Germany, they were going to go to a big get-together protest in southwestern city of Freiburg, but the party got on the wrong train. Oh, I don't know what to say about that, man. Well, let's go back a few years to about 1965, to be exact, Sunday night, January 24th. A new Bern police detective, John Pate, was sitting in the dark in his patrol car, possibly keeping watch for trouble during the five-county NAACP meeting being held at St. Peter's AME Zion Church, which, of course, technically should be illegal. It was a year of mixed illegal for the church to claim tax exemption, of course. It was a year of mixed blessings for the NAACP, a year before the Civil Rights Bill had passed. That was good, but the Ku Klux Klan was responding with a tremendous boost in numbers. Just a minute here. That was bad, he said. Across the South, and very much in North Carolina, the KKK was protesting desegregation often in the form of intimidation, angry marches, armed motorcades, cross burnings. Oscar's mortuary, owned by a black businessman, Oscar Dove, had been the unwilling host of two cross burning events. Very few KKK members were being called to answer for their actions to defend the white South. New Bern had been pretty quiet for the better part of a year. However, it even had a biracial relations council to keep a lid on violence. So the detective was doubtless surprised at 8:35 p.m. when he heard an explosion. He got to the scene in less than a minute, coming to the smoking ruins of a Rambler. Two car lengths back, a second car, a Plymouth, was raised off the ground by another explosion, and he saw its hubcaps rolling off in all directions. Wow. Okay, here's the second part of that story. The doors of the church opened and the people flooded out. The owner of the Rambler was Carolina B. Chetwick, president of the Jones County NAACP. The other car was owned by Julius L. Chambers, a black Charlotte lawyer who was an up-and-coming civil rights activist who often represented the state's NAACP in court. Chambers looked over his car. A hole had blown through the car, the license plate gone, and nothing left but the gas of the gas tank. Some gas was lying on the road. Everyone gawked and started talking, but Chambers waved his arms calmly and said, "Nothing we can do about it. Let's go back inside," and the meeting went on. The perpetrators were three Vanceboro area men in a red Plymouth. The two younger were Lori Philigame, 21, and his cousin, Edward Philigame, 23. The ringleader was Raymond Mills, the combative and somewhat controversial leader, that is, exalted Cyclops of the county's KKK clavern, formed only 7 months earlier on June 4, 1964. He had placed a dynamite stick under each car, lighting the fuses that were long enough to let him get away. Judging from later trial testimony, the three pulled into a James City business and the Tip Top Drive-In to celebrate pulling off their crime. That was dumb. An Alliance woman, Doris Combo, saw them and talked briefly with them before they left. The men apparently had another stick or two of dynamite, and they wanted to use it. So they drove across the bridge to New Bern and headed for Pembroke, where Oscar's mortuary stood. Wow. Okay, let's see what happened here. Oscar's was a fairly new business, having been opened in 1960. Its brick structure, laid by Luke Martin Jr., the son of a Civil War veteran and a former slave. It was about 9:30 at night when they arrived, and the building was empty. Dove and a couple of employees had left the building just minutes earlier. Dove had been a member of the NAACP for 10 years and was also on the biracial committee, which was the top crime according to healthy white people. Newspaper reports vary, but apparently they used one or two of the sticks, blowing out windows and tearing up concrete in the vicinity of the mortuary's garage. One report mentioned damage to an ambulance. The reactions to the day were nearly as explosive as the bombings themselves. New Bern Mayor Mac L. Lupton and other city officials would issue a statement declaring the action to have been created by a warped mind. Someone trying to protect their white southern culture. A warped mind. Governor Dan K. Moore, oh yes, issued an anger statement. Quote, I cannot condemn too strongly the coward actions of those who use the cloak of darkness to destroy property or to threaten life of anyone in North Carolina. Well, I think you were probably destroying the lives of a lot of white people as time went on. The SBI and then the FBI, at the request of the NAACP, both were brought in to take over the investigation. Klan officials hastened to distance their organizations and even suggested that the FBI had set the whole thing up to frame them, which is possible. The bombings would have two important results across North Carolina. On the darker side, it would be credited with inspiring more bombings of violence in the Tar Heel State, but would also become the first significant conviction for a KKK-related crime. We'll look at the investigation and arrests next week. This appeared in the newspapers, the Sun Journal staff down in North Carolina, I guess. Well, that was a guerrilla war going on there. Most of the whites didn't take it too seriously. They may have done some criminal acts, but they didn't develop into a revolutionary position like they should have. And if you're going to play the game, you play it all the way. That's my opinion. If you're not going to play it all the way, stay home. Well, we've got another crisis on our hand, boys and girls. Two large swastikas were found spray-painted on the Alpha Epsilon Pi Jewish Fraternity House at the University of California, Davis, during Shabbat. Quote, Jewish people still can't feel safe on their own campuses and in their own houses, unquote. Nathaniel Bernhard, vice president of the UC Davis AEPI chapter, told the Sacramento Bee. Quote, anti-Jewism still exists today. It's not a fairy tale, unquote. Bernhard said the swastikas were spray-painted on the building sometime between 3 and 9 a.m. on Saturday. Wow. Well, if it was between, say, 5 and 9, it probably did it in broad daylight. Barry Broad, board president of the Jewish Federation of the Sacramento region, called the swastikas especially heinous. Oh, wow. Given the recent commemoration of the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, January 27th, do you think that they might have wanted to blow this up? I mean, figuratively? Do you think there was, isn't this advertising? Quote, unfortunately, the lessons that history has taught us about the culture of hate have not been heeded by everyone, unquote, Broad said in a statement. Now, I'll bet you $50 that some Jew or some over anxious Jew lover did that. Or some Hollywood Nazi, maybe. Maybe. Well, I mean, what would Holocaust remembrance be without swastikas being painted around? UC Davis Chancellor Linda P.B. Katia said, quote, nothing rivals a swastika as a more potent or offensive symbol of hatred and violence towards our Jewish community members. Well, I guess you're advertising for more people to go out and paint swastikas. Because that's what they want to hear. That's what anybody that wants to paint a swastika wants to hear. Nothing rivals a swastika as a more potent or offensive symbol of hatred and violence towards our Jewish community members. Well, now you're going to absolutely see more of them. Because that's what every kid down the block ought to want to put a swastika out there and get that reaction. They love that reaction. But as we know, many, 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 many times these swastikas are painted by either Jews themselves or wannabe Jews. Yeah. Well, Obama says he has watched terrible stuff, unquote, in ISIS beheading videos. He also said the U.S. is trying to save the life of a 26-year-old woman held by the Islamic State. Well, I wonder if he watches these drones bombing wedding parties in Iraq and things like that. Does that upset him? No, that's different. That's defending America. That just shows you that the fear of having one's head detached from the body is more powerful than drones, more powerful than rockets. They've finally found the cheap way of scaring their enemies out of their pants. Well, here's a little bit of history. The interest of the Jewish community in the American Civil War has traditionally been minute. Well, there was a lot of money loaned by Jews, as most Jews who arrived came in long after the war had ended. For that reason, two rare American Civil War tokens issued during the war by a Jewish restaurant in New York City have raised much curiosity among collectors. The 150-year-old tokens will be presented this week at the Kadim Auction House in Jerusalem. The background of the minting of these tokens lies in the American Civil War, during which the state ran out of money as it consumed existent stash. This prompted the private issuing of over 100,000 different types of tokens by a wide range of private merchants to fill the gap. Wow. Jews at the time comprised less than 1% of the total population, making Jewish artifacts from the time rare and uncommon, despite the fact that many Jewish merchants issued tokens, as many of the Jews worked in commerce. Only the Felix Dining Salon token had Hebrew letters stating kosher food was served. Not only the Hebrew letters make these tokens special, however. The reverse side of one of the tokens reveals the Union Shield and the legend Constitution and the Union, while another shows an Indian surrounded by 13 stars, representing the USA, of course. This corresponds with the historical research, which shows that the contemporary Jews identified almost completely with their neighbors, showing long-term and even post-war loyalty and patriotism with the North or the South in accordance to where they lived. Thousands of Jews had fought in the war itself, the majority with the North, of course, though Jews were also slave owners and even slave traders. Oh, you're kidding me. Felix Dining Room Salon, a Jewish restaurant in New York, was the one to issue the tokens. The token inscriptions reveals the salon was at 256 Broadway, New York City, today a residential building opposite to City Hall Park. It should not be surprising that such overt restaurants acted in New York at the same time as the Napoleonic Wars from 1803 to 1815, brought to a substantial immigration wave of Ashkenazi Jews to the city, and the communal societies were formed. You see what happens? See how all these wars screw things around and get people on the move, and the Napoleonic Wars between white people, white European people, brought to a substantial immigration wave of Ashkenazi Jews, and the kind of Sephardic, say, smell. Yeah. Then you wonder, you say, why did that happen? How did all those Jews get here? How did all those Islamics get here? Well, your leaders, both here and over there, bombing and shooting and killing people. Fratricidal wars driving people nuts, and they're leaving and coming over here. So who's to blame for that? Maron Aaron of the Kadim Auction House concludes that the small and rare as these tokens might be, they bear the vibrancy of Jewish life in New York, which started already over 150 years ago up until today. The tokens declared on one side the proud Jewish identity, and on the other side the profound affiliation to the American state and values and against the Southern people. No, I had it that. Well, here's another little bit of news. French military personnel guarding Jewish sites in Paris are learning firsthand what anti-Semitism, anti-Jewism feels like. The soldiers guarding a Jewish school in a suburb of the French capital have received death threats at least twice in the past 2 weeks. In the first incident, a man drove up in a car past the soldiers as they stood outside a school in Montreal, shouting, quote, "What does a Kalashnikov bullet in the head do? Does it bleed?" A police source quoted by La Figaro said the man also praised the recent terror attack on the offices of Charlie Hebdo and the kosher grocery also escaped the scene. The car drove away but was later tracked down by police, and the driver, approximately age 27, was arrested and detained overnight but was released next morning, obviously by Nazi cops. They should have beheaded him right on the spot. The previous Saturday night, a similar incident occurred in the suburb of Lorency, according to the France Soir Daily. Two soldiers standing guard outside another Jewish school were also threatened by a man pretending to hold a gun, who then fled the scene. At present, some 10,000 French military personnel are deployed around Paris region following a wave of terror attacks on January 7th, 8th, and 9th that were aimed at Jewish and non-Jewish French citizens alike. 10,000. Wonder how much is that costing the taxpayers of France? How much?
I don't think that they will. I don't think that they will ask the follow up. I think they should, and I think some journalists might. If I was a journalist and I was not really on either side, and you had this idea of income inequality, and you were a Republican, I would say, in a very steadfast way, because this would answer your own question really quickly, is, brother, I understand you understand the plight of working class Americans having less and less income every year, and then the poor, even poorer of that. Why do you oppose raising the minimum wage then? I mean, that's the very simplistic part of, you want to boost poor people's income? Raise the minimum wage. In real time, sources hadn't been raised in however many years. I mean, it's very much black and white. But back to your point, Jess, when you talk about them being the new party of blue collar lunch pail, they're already their party. And it's got nothing to do with economics. It's been their party. 70% of white males voted Republican in the last election and have always outperformed us, but it had nothing to do with economics. It has to do with, I call, the 4G theories. It's about God, gays, guns, and the government. Mm-hmm. And they keep them distracted around the economy because they're against every philosophy that really helps that person.
Right.
So you have to keep that poor white Southern voter distracted by, I'm going to take your guns, or they're going to take God out of your life, or the gay teacher's going to turn your son gay. You know, something crazy. And I've watched them do that in politics for years.
The culture wars certainly play a role. Jess, let's go to the phones and bring
you also just a funny look as well at some of the interesting things. It seems that one thing that all of the countries have in common is that all of them hate the Swedes. What have the Swedes done to earn that distinction?
It's really simple. They won. Whatever it was, they won everything. They're like the goody-goody big brother, the head boy. Right, they're Peter Perfect, and no one likes a goody-goody and a smart-ass. But in all seriousness, you know, if you look at the history of this region, it's basically the last 200 years has been Sweden kicking everyone's asses, and they didn't treat their neighbours, the Finns, very nicely when they ruled Finland. They took a lot of stuff from Denmark over the last couple of hundred years. Then they ruled Norway in a reasonable manner, but, you know, they still have this kind of superior air. And then they didn't really cover themselves in much glory during World War II. And then during the Cold War, when they were supposedly neutral, and still today they're supposedly neutral, they're one of the world's biggest arms exporters per capita. They play it both ways.
All right, and I found that so fascinating. They're neutral, but they make arms for everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And they really made hay during the Cold War and in the immediate post-war period. While the rest of Europe was licking its wounds and rebuilding, they didn't need to rebuild because they'd sailed through World War II and sold iron ore to the Nazis, for example, and profited hugely from that. So there is still this a resentment in the surrounding countries. So if you get a Norwegian drunk or a Dane drunk, it doesn't take long before the real feelings about the Swedes come out. And don't even get the Finns started on the Swedes. They're still not very happy about it.
Now, Norway is the richest country in the world per capita. But a lot of this has to do with oil reserves and obviously being dependent on fossil fuels.
Well, you know, the fantastic thing about Norway is up until the 60s, it was pretty much the country cousin, the hillbilly. Now they're like they're essentially the Beverly Hillbillies, because in the late 60s, early 70s, they struck oil and now gas in a big, big way. They're kind of like the Saudi Arabia of Northern Europe. They have the world's largest sovereign wealth fund. The problem is they have rather taken their foot off the gas, if you'll excuse the pun, and it's slightly, their wealth has slightly corrupted the Norwegians, and now that the oil price has taken a massive tumble, they're not facing hardship or ruin, but they're starting to wonder about whether it was so wise to let the oil take up such a large importance in their economy.
Well, and there was always that question of what would happen when it ran out, because it's not unlimited.
Well, they keep pushing back that. You know, they say 20 years, 30 years, but they keep finding more and more, and more gas in particular. So, and up until the oil price crash, it was becoming more and more economical to go for difficult to find and difficult to extract oil. Now that kind of difficult stuff is not so financially viable, and that's part of the problem.
Now, the Danes have scored very high on international happiness surveys. And they're a very small country, too, among these other countries. But they have the highest taxes, among the highest taxes in the world. Talk a little bit about why the Danes are so happy and some of the contradictions you found.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for the last 40 years, actually, they've come top or close to the top of these international happiness surveys. And I've spoken to some of the people who arranged these surveys, and secretly they will admit it's not happiness. They call them happiness surveys to get the headlines. What it's really about is life satisfaction. And the Danes are massively satisfied, self-satisfied, very content. And they have good reason to be. You know, they're pretty rich. They don't work very much. They work fewer hours than just about everybody else in the OECD. And they're pretty sexy, and they have a good sense of humor. So, you know, they have every reason to be satisfied. Things function here. It's pretty safe, right? So I would describe it more as they're not, you know, heel-kicking down the street with a sombrero and a cocktail. They're just satisfied with what they have. They really are exceptionally good at appreciating what they have as well. You know, they have this phenomenon called hygge. Don't know if you've heard about that, but it's they make the most of the dark winters by just cozying up. They have a great instinct for creating a cozy atmosphere. Light a fire, open a bottle of red wine, light a couple of candles, and you have a happy Dane, basically.
How are they regarded in the other Nordic countries?
Well, in the family, they're the kind of black sheep, right? They're the fun-loving black sheep, younger brother, I guess. The Swedes think they're a little bit bohemian, smoke a bit too much pot, drink a bit too much beer. The Danes like to think of themselves as a southern European member of the family.
Uh-huh.
That's comparative, but, you know. When I first came there,
right. I mean, they're still, if to an Italian or a Spaniard,
yeah,
they're icy people.
They're basically just Germans with nicer furniture. But
right.
I would never say that out loud. No danger listening to this.
No, I get that sense from Borgen, but of course Borgen's a TV show, so that's their own reflection of themselves. But I also get the sense, and it reminded me of New Zealand, they're a small country that has to sort of do a lot of different things to have an international impact, and sometimes has to realize that, you know, they have to take a back seat sometimes.
Well, the Danes have this incredible soft power in the world. They're very, very good at branding themselves. And one of the most powerful ways they've done that in the last few years are these TV series that you're talking about, Borgen, which is this drama about politics and a female prime minister.
And then there actually was a female prime minister that was elected after that series.
Exactly, yeah. And it's pretty true to life, actually. Really, I mean, it's not far off the reality. But they branded themselves, for example, as this great green, environmentally friendly country. When many people think about Denmark, you think about wind turbines, right? When you come in to land at Copenhagen Airport, you can see them all out on the sea. And in truth, they're not at all green. They're, according to the World Wide Fund for Nature, they're the fourth worst eco footprint per capita in the world, worse than the Americans, because they have this big, they don't have nuclear power, they don't have hydroelectric, they burn a lot of coal, they burn a lot of oil, and they have a big pig industry, right? So they import a lot of soybeans. So they're not as green as they've made themselves out to be, but that's their brand, and they're very smart at branding themselves. Look at Lego, look at Carlsberg, you know?
Right. And well, all of this design, I mean, it's just, you know, it's what people think about. Sophisticated, modern.
Functional, simple. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's true. They live extremely well, the Danes. They have a great standard of living. The quality of housing is fantastic. You know, every house, you look into the windows as you're walking down the street in the evening, they have beautiful lampshades, they have beautiful sofas. You know, they probably spend as much on the sofa as I used to spend on my car, you know?
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but Denmark owns Greenland, right? And they have a lot of problems with that, too, because there are people there who are native peoples who would like independence.
Well, I think those native people would dispute the word owned.
Right.
But and they have a lot of self-rule now, and they're slowly loosening a grip from Copenhagen. What's changed is the oil price. Now, there was about to be an oil boom in Greenland, but that oil is quite difficult to extract, and so that's on the back burner, and now Greenland is being a little bit more conciliatory towards Copenhagen. It's a difficult relationship. You know, the Danes, I didn't really realize this, but the Danes were once one of the biggest powers in Europe. They owned Iceland, the whole of Norway, some of southern Sweden, northern Germany, and Greenland. You know, they were a massive power, but over 200 or 300 years, they saw it slowly cut away, slip away, and that's been quite painful and chastening. But it's also been the making, I think, of the Danes, actually.
What I find really creepy is the idea that you were just saying that the oil reserves, the oil is very difficult to extract in Greenland, but as the polar ice caps melt more because of fossil fuel use, it will be easier to get that oil.
You broke up there, but I guess you're talking about the irony that
yes,
global warming will melt the ice cap.
Right,
and
right.
They'll be able to access, yeah. And the irony appears to be lost on the Norwegians, because if you talk to Norwegians, they're a bit like the pusher who doesn't touch his own stash, right? Because they all drive electric cars, they have hydroelectric power, but they've grown rich selling fossil fuels to the rest of the world. And, you know, if you talk to them about global warming, they just kind of put their hands over the ears and go, la, la, la. And they're also involved in extracting oil from the tar sands, have been in Canada. They're not quite as clean as they paint themselves out to be.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Michael Booth. The book is The Almost Nearly Perfect People, Behind the Myth of the Scandinavian Utopia. I'm Michelangelo Signorelli.
Little review of a book about the Nordic countries and their good points and their bad points. I thought it was quite interesting that Sweden, that represents itself to the world as being the big peacemaker all the time, are one of the biggest arms manufacturers in the world. And they're probably selling a lot of these arms down into Africa and so forth like that. So arms makers are bad news, baby. Bad news. And that's it for today. Moon's Day. We'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday, Tears Day. And in the meantime, be cool and shovel snow if you're in the Midwest and the Northeast, man, because it's out there. It's out there.